This week, we're continuing a series of sketches on Spokane City Council candidates. We're now on District 1, which includes Hilliard, the Logan neighborhood near Gonzaga, and part of East Central. This is an interview with me, Rebecca White, and candidate Luke Jasmine III. He's one of three candidates running for Spokane City Council District 1. This interview has been edited for length and clarity. You can find more City Council interviews on SpokanePublicRadio.org. And just first, thank you for being here and taking a few minutes out of your morning to talk to me.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And I guess my first question that I always have for basically any candidate I interview is just tell me a little bit about yourself and why you're running for City Council.
Yeah, so about me, my name is Luke Jasmine III. I'm a small business owner, a child care provider, president of a statewide grassroots advocacy group. I'm a father of two amazing daughters who are 10 and 7. I'm a first generation Haitian American. My parents, who are proud U.S. citizens now, worked really hard. And but they, at the same time, they also used their resources to look after other people. And this is the model that I grew up around, and that is a fundamental core value of mine. And I believe it's a core value of District 1. We look after each other out here, and I'm excited to continue to learn, listen, and work on finding win-win solutions that benefit everyone. As far as why I'm running because I'm passionate about this community. Literally everything I do has a community focus, whether it's advocacy for healthcare and better compensation for our workers, being a child care provider, helping small businesses, especially those owned by people of color, even support for youth programming. I mean, the list goes on. I'm deeply embedded in the community. I'm focused on listening and getting a thorough idea of what's going on. And I look to work collaboratively with the community to get results, right? We're at a very pivotal place right now in our city, and we have a real opportunity to steer the city in the direction that our communities want to go. And I think I'm exactly the leader that our city needs right now.
And so, you know, my first, you know, getting towards the policy questions, my first question is related to economic recovery. Spokane, as well as the rest of the country, has been hit pretty hard by the pandemic. And our economy locally, it might look a little bit different coming out of this. What should our city be doing to help with recovery? And are there things that the city council could really do to really spur economic development going forward?
Yeah, well, this is one of the big things that is important to me. I would first like to commend our city for their response during COVID, both the administration and city council. We saw a lot of collaboration between them and large and small organizations. And I think we need to be proud of the response. What's next? Well, we need to look at ways to be more efficient with the resources coming from the state and federal government. I think we need to ask questions, did we reach all the demographics that we want to touch? I want to ensure that we are working collaboratively to prioritize seniors and others who are high risk to continue receiving access to immunizations. I also think it's important to prioritize those frontline workers because they have been here supporting the entire community during this time. We want to make sure that they have the resources and help to keep going on, right? So another thing that I think the city did really well is I think we need to continue utilizing groups like Latinos in Spokane, the Carl Maxey Center, Community Minded Enterprise, Innovia, Women Helping Women, The Zone, NAACP, just to name a few, to continue with the outreach and community awareness and education. There's an opportunity to reach more small businesses, as you know, and I really want to use our resources to meet them where they are and walk them through this recovery process together. Spokane is unique, right, with small business community, and it's important that we ensure that this community still exists while we come out of COVID. But going to my district, though, I want to be clear. We need to remember that District 1 was not doing well before COVID. Now is an opportunity to not only recover, but provide much needed infrastructure to my district for the fullest benefit of the recovery. To me, that includes investments in transportation, childcare, and housing. I believe it's important to get input and voice from those in the district to direct the transition so growth happens within the neighborhood and not just to the neighborhood. We need to really look at the what the freeway did to East Central community, right? And we're still recovering from what that did to the community, and I think we can learn from that. With the building of the North-South freeway, we need to make sure neighborhoods like Hilliard and Minnehaha have the resources and investments needed to thrive. And we also need to find funds to support work on things like the Northeast Public Development Authority, right? Like that's there. I believe it's important to involve the people in the neighborhood's perspective to learn from our past, like East Central, to make sure that those specific things are supported. I truly believe it is necessary to invest in infrastructure, like I mentioned earlier, specifically with our streets and parks in my district. I want to be able to bring my daughters to beautiful parks that we can share and visit with community members. And those are the things that we really need in District 1.
And I guess when you think about, I feel like the big question, I think when you have sort of a lot of investment in projects is, are you anticipating that maybe some of the stimulus that's still coming could be used for some of these projects, or, the city maybe needs to prioritize differently, or where do you imagine sort of the resources for, these investments might originate from?
Absolutely. I will be advocating for investments to go to Sprague, right? Sprague in my district. We are seeing businesses there. We're seeing people walking to the stores. We need to just continue improving that. Fifth, I know that's not in my district, but East Central was split between second and first district, which I don't know if a lot of people know, but Fifth District, we need to really help and make sure that we're revitalizing there too. But like I mentioned before, look, we already have the Northeast Public Development Authority, right? Like the work is already going. We have a lot of smart people working on that. We just need to make sure we're prioritizing and putting funds there. So, absolutely using resources coming from the state and federal government to do that, because that will help with making sure our district recovers and is bigger and stronger moving forward.
And so one, I guess, topic I'm trying to have a conversation with every candidate about is homelessness. It was an issue before the pandemic, but, with an eviction moratorium coming to an end, with some forms of stimulus potentially at some point running out, how can our city prepare for, potentially more people becoming homeless and make sure that our shelter system is really equipped for our community's needs?
Yeah, and what I want to say about this is I am open ears. I'm listening. I've had the privilege of visiting and talking to some of the local shelters in Spokane, people who are passionate about this issue and finding solutions. I love the Volunteers of America approach, especially Crosswalk Youth Shelter. They have a great success rate of taking people in, providing wraparound services, and getting them on the pathway to sustainability. I visited with a group of business leaders on the issue of homelessness and unhoused individuals that I've been following closely. And look, for me, I'm really a sustainability person, always asking the question, then what? Right? So I believe in finding the root of an issue in order to lessen or prevent it, not just finding a stopgap solution. So I believe in low barrier housing, but again, we need to get to the root, an issue that will require all hands on deck. And you're seeing that. You're seeing a lot of people really try to work on finding solutions to this. As far as me personally, I really like the neighborhood, the local neighborhood models. We're getting input from each of the neighborhoods on how that happens, right? We have seen this model successfully happen in my neighborhood with Family Promise, which is right across the street from my house. Something that does have overwhelming support is retooling our unhoused tracking system. We need to figure out a way to better track the people that are unhoused. I also believe it is important to track those in transitional housing as well, and those, like you mentioned, that are on the verge of becoming unhoused. When you look at the map of District 1, we have a lot of people that are in jeopardy of possibly becoming unhoused, and that's going to add even more, right, to our homeless population. So better tracking system, and then let's continue doing what we're doing. We have many people at the table, very smart people at the table, and I'm just looking to listen more, learn more, and do my part in making sure that we can get great solutions around homelessness.
And you mentioned housing and being on the verge of losing housing. Affordable housing, it's been a crisis for a long time, before the pandemic. But over the last year, I think that crisis has become even sharper, and that buying a house is kind of farther away for most people, and renting, finding affordable rentals is much more difficult. Is there some sort of policy idea that you might have that could address that crisis? Your predecessor, Kate Burke, was very invested in tenancy and protections and relations between landlords and tenants. Is there anything in either of those realms that you think might help with that crisis?
Yeah, when it comes to housing, I think we can all agree that we have a housing issue. In my district, the residents, like you mentioned, are in high jeopardy of being displaced. So a lot of my efforts at this particular moment is making sure that many of the seniors that are on fixed incomes, many of those renters that need assistance, and those small landlords who are on the brink of bankruptcy, that they all are getting access to the resources to make sure it's not adding to our unhoused population. The second thing that we need to do is make sure we're looking at the codes. I have the, again, privilege of being on a housing board, and that has been very eye-opening to me. So what I come up with is there's not a silver bullet. There are four areas, though, that I think we need to work in tandem to see a shift. Number one is let's increase the supply and preserve the affordability of homes. Number two, let's equitably increase access to credit, especially when we're talking about the ESL communities. And number three is let's optimize that the land use for affordable housing. And my last part is let's ensure access to and development of communities of opportunity through revitalization with clear protections against gentrification and displacement. I think if we're able to do those things, we will be in a much better spot coming out of this pandemic.
I guess my follow-up question to that. So those four areas, I think there is some limits to, as a city council person, what you could do, for example, to increase the availability of credit, for example, to be able to get like a home loan. But as far as like preserving, I guess, revitalization without gentrification, I guess that is a specific, I think, concern. Like Kendall Yards, for example, building a lot more units, but they're not necessarily affordable for some of the people that need them most. I guess, is there sort of a strategy of a way that maybe the city could approach that, or some neighborhoods that might be good in?
This is a I'm a collaborative person, right? So and anything I do, I'm listening. So right now I may have my solutions, but as I talk to more and more people, talk to the leaders around these policies and issues, then there might be some better examples that come up. But to me, we need to expand resources for home repair, home modification, and weatherization assistance. We need to get funding for lead and asbestos remediation. And we could potentially create land banks to that facilitate redevelopment of abandoned properties with affordable housing. That to me is an absolute must in Spokane.
And so my next, I guess, area that I also just wanted to make sure that we got to is policing. This last year, the city council did unanimously agree on a police contract. They're in the position where they're about to negotiate another one, and it's very possible that when you're on city council, you'll be in the position to negotiate a police contract. Do you feel like the most recent police contract hit the mark as far as transparency and oversight? And if you were a city council member and in the position to negotiate or sign or vote on a police contract, would you want more independent oversight and, some other, I guess, measures just to keep the community safe and officers safe?
Well, I do have the pleasure of serving as a commissioner on the police ombudsman, and so I have those real insights as far as the contract and really what's going on in Spokane specifically. And what I'll say is, we have to acknowledge as a community that when it comes to public safety, there isn't a one size fits all. People who live in Indian Trail may have a different experience with law enforcement than people in the Logan neighborhood. That is why I really support community policing and think it's important. And what I mean by that is, we need to promote police being involved in the communities they serve. We have neighborhood councils available already. Let's build familiarity there, right? I'm a 6'7", 300-pound black male here in Spokane. So if anyone has watched the news recently, there's a lot of worry about my safety. And I don't do anything wrong. I shouldn't have to have any fear, right? But while I'm driving through my neighborhood, if I see a cop car behind me, it still produces a lot of anxiety, even if I'm not doing anything wrong. So I want to get to a point where I'm driving and I don't just see a cop behind me, I see Steve, right? And we get there by creating more community involvement with police. And I believe the police and the sheriff's office understand the need for building back trust in the community too. Just last week, we had Ozzy and others from the sheriff's department come and read to our kids at Parkview. Before COVID, we were participating in a program where we brought kids to the park, and police officers were playing basketball with them. So there are definitely opportunities. Now, going to what you're saying as far as is there any reform? Yeah, I believe we need to prioritize human life and really take a deeper look at use of force. I absolutely support looking at the mental health models and looking to incorporate that more, as I believe we do not have enough mental health support. And questions that I ask is, do we have the right experts addressing the right issues? How can we allocate our funding to not only appropriately support the people in the community, but also the people in the jobs that work with the people in crisis? And lastly, for me, and you already touched on this, we already have a police ombudsman, right? We just need to make sure the ombudsman has independent oversight like the people of Spokane voted for. And I think if we do those things, we'll be in a really great spot here in Spokane with public safety.
Well, I think that answers, all the follow-ups that I'm, just taking them off one by one. But I think one of my last policy questions that I'm trying to get to everyone is environmental issues. Our city has taken on some sort of both climate, trees, water, utilities in different ways to think about our resource usage. Do you think there's room for more of that, or maybe a targeted approach to think about maybe environmental inequities? Should our city be taking a larger role in that, or do you think that may be something outside of their purview?
Yeah, I really love the plan that we have, and I think it's ambitious. And one thing I will say is I believe climate change is real. I believe in science, and to me, we really need to work together to figure out ways to preserve our Earth. We're fortunate enough to live in Washington State, which is, in my opinion, just a pillar for the rest of the United States and how to look at our climate and do our part. As far as what we could do here in Spokane. Well, there's a commercial from President Brian Beggs, and essentially what he was saying is the way I took it when I was watching as a viewer is, hey, Luke, make sure you're not watering your grass too much, right? Make sure you're looking at your water usage, and I think that's we need more of that. We need more of those outreach opportunities to just remind people, like, hey, look, we need to protect our vital resources our aquifer provides, and that's as simple as just making sure, you know what, do I really need to water my grass this much? Do I really need to keep the water running if I'm not using it? And I think that's something that our community can do just right now. The other piece is, I do, like I said, I believe in climate change, but we have to understand that there are, or remember, I should say, that there are people that are affected by any decisions that we make, right? So a lot of people went to school for and have built careers in some of these areas, and we really need to make sure, yes, we are progressing, and yes, we are making the needed changes, but we're not leaving all the people, the hardworking people behind, right? And we need to figure out how do we transition so that our community could be safer, our world can be livable, but we're not taking people out of jobs or not being mindful of the needed transition and resources needed to do that.
Well, my last question, just to wrap things up, is, you're one of three candidates right now that are running for this district seat. Why are you the best fit to represent your district?
Look, I have a lot of respect for the people running for the seat, but when it comes, look, when you compare the resumes, you see, I have a history of taking action. If you look at just this past 12 months and what me and my team have been able to do in response to the pandemic, we've created a nonprofit that seeks to eliminate transportation barriers for kids and families to services like speech, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and now we are in partnership to add mental health as well. Look what we did through the partnership with other local organizations and coalitions to get $3 million out to childcare providers and families to ensure that kids have a safe place to go and parents are able to go to work. We've partnered with the Live Zone and adapted our school-age model so that we could support remote learning. We've implemented youth programs with local partners that we know will have a lifelong impact on the kids participating. With other public and private partners, we have gotten access to immunizations for our most vulnerable community members. And finally, we have about finally, we are about to see historic investments from our statewide legislature in early learning. Special thanks to our very own Senator Annie Billig and our legislators from the 3rd Legislative District for that support. All in all, my unique experiences, skills, collaboration, and never-ending drive to get things done makes me the most qualified for this position. But if you're listening to this, I need your help. I need you to share this like crazy. If you have a different take on anything I said, or you really agree with it, please visit jasmine4spokane.com, and I would love to hear from you. Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
No problem. I appreciate your time.